Viños en el arco, la defensa es colosal. González, Orlando, La Torre, Nicolás Fuentes y Chumpitas. Chale, Mifflin y Cubillas y el gran Perico León. Bailón y Alberto Gallardo completan.
Welcome back to the Peruvian Waltz Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Galindo. Joining me this evening is Renato Vilches. Renato, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine. I'm finally back in university classes. Everything's been all right. And now I'm here back to doing what I usually do, being part of the panelists for this Waltz Podcast.
Absolutely. And glad to have you back as always. Also joining us this evening is Kevin Montalvan. Kevin, how are you doing?
Hey, Peter, everything's going good on my end. Just eagerly awaiting the start of the league.
Yes, as we all are, and we're going to talk about that briefly. But before we do, we're going to introduce a debutante to this podcast. It is Ruben Aguirre. Ruben, how are you doing? Welcome to the show. Glad for you to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an absolute joy. I just wanted to, you know, see what we can do here and talk about and, you know, hopefully get the fans excited about the year to come.
Absolutely. And to those who don't know, Ruben is a little bit of an expert, maybe being a little bit modest here, but on the youth scene in Peruvian football. So I know a lot of the listeners are very interested to know about the next up-and-coming players, maybe players to watch for in certain positions who could make a push in the next year or so, maybe even sooner. We shall see. So he is the man to talk to. We will have him on, I'm sure, for many, many future episodes. But first, guys, while we are on the subject, obviously we've seen a couple of updates regarding start dates for certain leagues. One of them is Liga Uno, of course, because as COVID-19 cases continue to rise in Peru, as they are pretty much everywhere, they have finally figured out probably when they're going to start the season. It looks like it's not going to be until March, as basically confirmed by Peru's Ministry of Health recently. But on top of that, we found out on, I believe it was Wednesday, that Major League Soccer won't begin their season until April the 17th, after moving the start date from April the 3rd. So this would affect players like, and I'm just kind of going through the last squad here, but Canchita Gonzalez, Horacio Calcaterra, Orejas, Ruiz Diaz, Polo, López, and Cayens, who were all in the last squad. And theoretically, they would be without match fitness for at least 3 to 4 months if they played in either March qualifier. So, Renato, I'll ask you this first. Do these start dates in your eyes, these delayed start dates, hurt our chances versus Bolivia and Venezuela next month?
It's certainly going to be a huge obstacle considering that match fitness was a huge problem for us during the first four qualifying dates. Since that, we have none of our players, or most of our key players, are not playing much. You can imagine Gareca is very concerned of how they will be able to play. Regardless, I do think that he will still call them up somehow, because while it's true that they're not playing, if they're at least staying in shape, You can expect a call-up, especially if it's the players that he trusts the most.
And Kevin, what do you think about this? Do you feel like it'll be detrimental to our chances? Do you think it might hurt Gareca's squad selection at all? What do you think?
Honestly, for players that aren't playing, that are more fringe players, players he maybe hasn't called up, I could see that affecting them. But honestly, most of these players, like the ones in MLS, aside from, you know, Galese and possibly Flores, I think they're mostly non-starters. So I don't think it'll be a huge difference on how Gareca does his call-up.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you as well. Ruben, what do you think? Do you think that this will hurt us in any way?
Like you guys said, yeah, it's more of a case of we don't have as many starters in the MLS as much as we, you know, would usually have. Flores has kind of fallen off the rocker, but we can hope that he can get back in form in the coming months that come around. But as far as we have right now, I think we're pretty good. As far as, you know, just the base teams, you know, with Tapia and Aquino starting to pull back up. So I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, me too. Obviously, it'll maybe affect parts of what Gareca does. With this in mind, Ruben, I'll throw it back to you. How many MLS or Liga Uno players in general do you see getting called up for March after this news. We obviously know that Gareca doesn't like to change the core of his team too much, but not only did he tease this, but Oblitas possibly said that there could be changes coming, just given how drastic of a position the team is in entering these qualifiers.
Absolutely, yeah. One of the big points I was thinking about bringing up was, yeah, the context that we're playing in the eliminatorias right now, because we did not the greatest in the last couple of fechas. And they did tease that we would have to, you know, change things a bit up and maybe get the players a little bit more motivated by letting them know that they don't have a bot position. So I think that, yeah, there could be a lot of different changes, and not just in players in Liga Uno. I mean, we have players abroad too that could probably try to take a bigger spot on the international scene. We have Peña, and we have, you know, players like Vilca, if he actually puts in the work. So, I mean, you know, just there are alternatives out there, and I think that he will look at those alternatives, especially now that he has a pretext for it, being that the players won't be at a full match health, perhaps, and also in just form in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin, maybe an extension to Ruben's answer there. I mean, first of all, how many of these players do you see getting included in the squad? And maybe as a bit of a follow-up, is there anybody that you could see maybe being a quote-unquote surprise call-up in the March squad?
As far as MLS, I think there's a slight chance there might be an issue with getting, you know, Flores or Reyna, since we've had problems with DC in the past. I don't think there's really anyone else, maybe Callens. But unfortunately for Callens, you know, we have some center back depth. You know, Santa Maria's playing right now, Araujo's playing. Abraham, I think he might have a Sudamericana match, or one international match coming up, it escapes me. And Reiner is actually, I think he's projected to start tomorrow. Well, by the time you guys hear this, he'll probably have started. So on that end, we're pretty good. He gets called up. I was looking forward to Costa being called up, but his injury, unfortunately, is not likely to see him.
Probably not. Probably not, unfortunately. Renato, first of all, again, who do you see potentially getting into the squad? And in terms of, I guess, MLS players, Liga Uno players in general, who do you expect to see in the squad? Who do you expect to see omitted? What are your thoughts on that?
So regarding MLS players, I do expect Gareca to call almost all of them up, regardless if they're playing or not. But I do think that there are some states that the players are based on are trying to avoid, like, letting them out of the country, especially with what happened with Flores and Callens. With Flores, he's more of a Gareca player, which I feel like that would be a priority for Gareca, while Callens, Peru has a good amount of center back depth, so I'm not sure if he would be a loss per se unless we have a major injury crisis. But I do expect, like, at least Gareca to call up the players he usually calls up normally. And even if Liga 1 starts a bit later than sooner, if there's a few, like at least two match days covered of to get them fitness, like players like Anchita, then the call-ups I could expect happen.
Yeah, also true. And I mean, some of the teams in Liga Uno will be playing in Libertadores. Obviously, the MLS teams, depending on which teams they are, will be in Champions League as well, starting very, very soon, actually. So there's at least a little bit of a buffer before the qualifiers begin. They have some fitness that they can build, as little as it is, but it's still something before they can join up for camp. But, you know, in terms of potential changes, I'm just not sure how much Gareca changes it. I'm sure he's going to keep the majority of the regulars together, regardless of fitness. But we'll probably end up seeing maybe two or three potential surprises just to maybe fill in the gaps a little bit, because I'm sure he doesn't want to go into these pivotal games with everybody, or maybe not everybody, but at least all the MLS and Liga Uno players completely cold. Finally, on this, Kevin, before we move on, do you think that this maybe explains why the likes of Christian Benavente are supposedly on Gareca's radar again, given the later start dates for the leagues in question? Or do you feel like it's just a case of, hey, you know, he's moved to a better situation and he's worth monitoring?
I think Benavente has been consideration at Charleroi since the moment he's gotten there. I'm fairly certain he started today in the Belgian Cup, and he debuted almost the day after he signed for them. So I can see Gareca being, you know, happy with that decision, that he made the right choice to go somewhere where he feels comfortable and will get playing time. So I definitely see him being in consideration at this point. I also, on my end, I think Ormeño has done enough to get called up at this point. And unfortunately, Alder is not having a good time in Colombia. You know, Farfán still doesn't have a club. It's been months now. And Guerrero will have zero match fitness.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into the striker situation more in depth later, but yeah, I mean, that could be a potential quote-unquote surprise that we see, just given maybe the lack of really top-quality options that are available to Peru. La Padula aside, like, you know, the competition's pretty much wide open, you would have to think, in that position. But we'll talk about that later on in the show. We'll move on to, I guess, a bit of breaking news, because it was announced late this afternoon, on Thursday, the day that we are recording this episode. CONMEBOL announced a friendly tournament for the under-21 national teams in the region today. The tournament will run parallel to the CONMEBOL qualifiers, using the same calendar. Each team will have at least 16 players and will travel on the same flight as the Mayores, so as the senior team. And matches will be played as kind of preliminaries, or one day before each match if they can't play it basically on the same day. And CONMEBOL will contribute about $30,000 to each federation for the traveling costs and whatnot, just to kind of stomach those extra carrying costs, I suppose. So Ruben, this is the time for you to shine. I'll start by asking you this. Will Peru's squad, you feel, essentially be the under-20s that would have gone to the Sudamericano Sub-20, or do you feel like there might be a mixture of maybe, like, say, a little bit younger and players who kind of hit that threshold right at the top?
I think it's kind of wide open between those categories from, like, the year 2000 and below, because honestly, like, last year, we had a bunch of players that were on the younger scale that just impressed a lot. And so I think that you're just going to have a huge mixture of different ages. Like, probably the most impressive categories we had were like 2003, 2002, some players in 2001, and then 2000, you had players like Morillo, which I'm sure that he's going to be at least in that consideration if he impresses, of course, in Libertadores. Or at the very least, we can maybe even see him in an actual call-up, because, you know, we actually need a younger alternative in the national team as well. So, yeah, I feel like it's going to be all over the place with the call-ups in terms of categories, because it's U21. So I think it's going to give a lot of players the opportunity to just form some camaraderie with the team, since, like you said, they're going to be on the same flight, as well as, you know, get a little bit of a time to demonstrate themselves to Gareca, because I'm sure he's going to be around to watch them as well.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he's going to love that. He's going to love the convenience having them there, getting to see them firsthand. I mean, it'll probably do wonders for both parties, let's be completely honest. Follow up to you immediately, Ruben. Who are some of the players? I mean, you mentioned maybe one or two there, but who are some of the players that you definitely expect to see taken for these games from the start?
Well, just, you know, at the top of my head, you know, there's just some players out there who just really made an impact on Liga Uno last year, and who were honestly just surprises, like one who we're expecting to have probably a lot more protagonism in the actual tournament coming up. I mean, well, the league coming up would be Uriel Celi and Aaron Sanchez. Both of them were just pivotal to just Cantolao surviving last season. And I'm assuming at the very least that they're going to have the same kind of impact, if not more. And you have players, you know, like Reina, left back, who was just impressive defensively, and who you would have expected to be the undisputed starter for the U20 that was going to come up. That unfortunately didn't happen. And you have players who, you know, also impressed as well, like Ariane Romani, but, you know, he had his little discipline issues. But I'm sure with Navarro in charge, he's also going to maybe calm down in that aspect as well. Then you have players who just stood out in general, like, you know, Diego Soto, Adrián Ascuez in Deportivo Municipal. You know, I mean, there's a lot of offensive options. You know, the defensive options are going to come into their own as well. You know, I just there's a wide pool there, and you're just expecting them to really consolidate themselves in this year coming up.
Indeed, yeah, I love this age group that's coming through. I mean, there's a lot of potential in quite a few positions, which I'm sure they're going to probably be in contention for national team spots in the next year here. Maybe even as soon as the Copa America, if Gareca wants to maybe take more of an experimental squad, we shall see. Obviously, assuming Copa America gets played, we still don't really know if that's going to happen. Kevin, I'll ask you this. Obviously, Ruben mentioned a lot of names, but provided any of these guys get called up, who are you excited to see the most? Who do you feel maybe has the most to prove to Gareca over the next few months?
I'm going to base it off the Silvestres U20 that played the friendly tournament in Brazil. So I definitely think Reina has a lot to prove. For fullbacks, obviously, that's a spot that we always, you know, talk about, that Peru could use that extra depth. Grimaldo seems like a solid forward option. I'm hoping he gets more minutes with Cristal this year. But I think the most important thing about this, you know, the 16 players that are going to be following around the Selección, it takes me back to Russia. They took the sparring, the U20 sparring, and you could tell Gareca was watching them. Like, he was probably coaching them a little bit, because after that, Lopez became a regular call-up. Pretel, he took to the Copa America. Mora got a call up in September for the local call up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these guys are seeing it. There's an option. There's a chance for them to possibly get promoted in there if they show off, if they make the right moves.
Yeah, for sure. Renato, who do you feel maybe has the most to prove here to Gareca when it comes to these under-20, under-21 players that are going to be traveling?
Paulo Reina is a certain. He was spectacular in his first half full-time season at Melgar, especially with his defense, which is something that we've been begging for, considering that seeing a defensive fullback in Peru is rare these days. And another player that I don't believe has been mentioned yet, and he's about to be 21 soon, is Eric Murillo, who is an attacking-minded right back who impressed so much in the league last season. He reminds me a bit of a Gonzalo Montiel, which that'd be nice considering that I really like Montiel as well. And I do think that he could make himself to Gareca's squad, to his main senior squad, because I feel like we could use a depth in right back, since Advíncula's performances in the national team recently have been unimpressive, to say the least.
Yes, 100%. And Adlo Corso looks really, really slow. If you know that Argentina game is any evidence, which I think it is, if you're going to start him in really any of those games, that's probably not ideal. So yeah, I mean, if he can break through and maybe establish himself, that would be more than ideal, I think, for the national team, 100%. Lots of names to consider there, obviously, that we've all considered. So if you start to see maybe one or two of them maybe filtering into the news, then, you know, you heard it here first on the Peruvian Waltz. We will move on to the Copa Libertadores and Sudamericana draws. These happened last week now, pretty much exactly a week ago from the time you are going to be listening to this. We now know that Ayacucho and Cesar Vallejo, basically where they're going to be playing and who they're going to be playing in order to get into the group stage proper here. UCV drew Caracas in the first phase. They would meet Junior in the second phase if they can get past Caracas, and then somehow if they can get past Junior, they would face likely Bolivar or whoever qualifies out of Uruguay and is drawn with them. So we shall see there. Renato, what did you think of Cesar Vallejo's draw, and what are your expectations for them as of right now?
I do think that they have a solid draw. Gareca shouldn't be like, is they're not, they're like could totally like be, they should be like a, like at least a side that you can expect that can be beatable. And with also Junior recently in CONMEBOL competition, they have been very, very disappointing. So, and I think Melgar showed not long ago that any Peru team, if they are like have the mentality and the players, that they're more than capable of beating a Colombian team. And I do think even like the Uruguay 3 or Bolivia, it shouldn't be that hard. What I will say is that I am more concerned about Ayacucho at this point, considering that they've been poorly reinforcing and also to see that the opponent they will be facing.
Yes, more on them in a bit. Kevin, what are your expectations for Cesar Vallejo? I mean, they've replenished well. They've kept Gemmell, which I think was really important. And they got a fairly favorable draw. Like, it's not the easiest, but it's also not the most difficult, which I think is kind of nice for a Peruvian squad to have.
Yeah, I think Cesar Vallejo has made some really good steps. This is going to be Chemo's fourth year as manager of Vallejo. They essentially kept the starting 11, aside from the goalkeeper who was on loan from Lau. So I think they can just build on what they did last year. I think they're a very serious side, and I think Utese did Vallejo a favor because they took Caracas Argentinian nine. So I've also heard of another injury in Caracas side. So they're not doing too hot right now, from what I understand. So I think Vallejo can capitalize on the situation to go into this round favorably. It's always hard with the Peruvian side to say that, but I think I can commit to saying they're the more favored side in this case. And as far as the rest of the draw, it could be worse. I think they'll take it one step at a time, and we'll see how Junior is if they get by Caracas.
Absolutely. And yes, you said it. Anytime a Peruvian side is favored, I think we kind of, our ears go up and we kind of are like, oh my God, like, please don't let the inevitable happen, and that is crushing disappointment occur. But we shall see. I mean, Cesar Vallejo looks definitely very good. Ruben, what do you think of their draw? What are your expectations for Cesar Vallejo in the Libertadores?
Well, just going off of the system that Chemo had last year, I think we can expect a really organized side that really just goes for a lot of attacking in the general, especially because he has so many different changes in tactics he can make. If he wants to, he could do a very defensive side. He has people that he can put in for that. If he wants to do all out offensive, he can go all out offensive as well. I mean, he has a lot of different options, and I would expect that he's working out all the different variables that he has to think about going into this match. So I think he'll be very prepared at the very least. I don't think it's gonna if because yeah, it's one of those things that we get terrified every time we're supposed to be the protagonist of this round. But I feel like Renato said, if Melgar taught us one thing as Peruvians last year, is that we can hold our own. Our football is effective in the international stage or just the continental stage. And I think that's something to keep in mind, as well as for the people in Cesar Vallejo, as well as for the fans. That would be probably the only thing I'd leave at that point.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, obviously, and Renato mentioned it, Ayacucho, they got the polar opposite kind of a draw. Like, it was a disaster of a draw for them. They got whoever is going to finish seventh in Brazil, which at this point is up for grabs with three games left. It could be Bragantino, it could be Corinthians, it could be Grêmio, it could be Fluminense. We just don't know who could finish there because it's so tight in that position. And obviously, with Palmeiras qualifying and being so low in the table, it kind of shifts things around and everything else. But Ayacucho will start in the second phase against a Brazilian club. So I feel like I'm asking a very rhetorical question here. But Ruben, what are your expectations for Ayacucho given what they've done? Now, I guess on the bright side, they're probably going to have the same system in place, which I guess will be nice for the few key players that are remaining, but that's kind of the issue. So many key players left, and we talked about it on a couple past episodes of the show, that you really do feel for Ayacucho in this situation right now.
If I was a part of the team in any way, coach, ball boy, any kind of position, I would be a little bit apprehensive, but at the very least, I'd say the other team isn't really going to know what to expect either, considering it'll be a completely new system. That being said, yeah, it's going to be one of those more probably it's going to be one of those negative toss-ups, but at the very least, like you said, they're going to have the same kind of system. So at the very least, we can at least hope that they are going to have some kind of, you know, defensive plan, especially with such a high offensive team like the teams that they have coming out of Brazil. So I'm hoping that they at least prioritize, you know, defensive organization, and hopefully it's not too bad at the very least.
Kevin, do you have any hope for Ayacucho in this situation, or are you pretty much just as pessimistic as most of us here?
I'm pessimistic. Brazilian clubs just have our number in international matches. So I don't expect a lot, but I do hope that Ayacucho can make a decent show.
Yeah, I think that's probably all we can really say. Renato, do you have anything else to add? I feel like you might share our thoughts right now, but if you have anything new to add, you may add it.
Yeah, that's going to be an unfortunate draw. And what's more is that if you just look beyond that Ayacucho will face a Brazilian team, if by any miracle they manage to pass whatever Brazilian team they get, you know who is one of their potential opponents? Independiente del Valle. And considering Peruvian teams' records against Ecuadorian teams, that's also not a good sign. And we're talking about a rising South American team lately in continental competition. And so my hopes for Ayacucho are kind of down in the drain, especially with how, like, they've been poorly, like, losing everybody that helped them got this far in last season and not really replacing well, especially getting ex-Alianza players, which doesn't really give me much hope considering some of them were part of the relegation.
I think it's fair to say that, you know, it's not looking great for Ayacucho for sure, especially when they get Alianza players to kind of help them out. Anyway, moving on, just a quick reminder before we go into the Sudamericana, all losers in the third phase of the Libertadores drop into the Sudamericana for 2021, so there is that as well. In the Sudamericana itself, Peru's four qualifiers will square off in two-legged ties in the first round to determine which two clubs will represent the country in the second round. So UTC will face Sport Huancayo, Manucci will face Melgar, which I think could be a very tasty tie. Kind of unfortunate in a way that they're going to be meeting each other, but it is what it is. And unlike the Libertadores clubs, I feel like, you know, these games will be played basically right as Liga Uno starts. So, Renato, for you, who are the favorites in these two matchups for you as it stands right now with both squads constructed as they are?
With Melgar and Manucci, I'm disappointed because both teams have reinforced very well this season, and I was hoping that maybe with one like team would get the one that's at disadvantage, especially like Melgar possibly getting UTC, who have, let's be honest, have not reinforced well. But at this point, it seems like an even. Maybe Melgar could get in the way, maybe Manucci, which is an even match. As for UTC and Huancayo, honestly, I can't really say much. Both teams have lost their players, especially UTC. They lost Enrison Ramirez, which is a huge loss considering that he really got them that far in last season. So it's a wait-and-see situation.
Yes, that's probably all it is right now. Kevin, who would be your favorites as it stands right now in both of those matchups?
The Manucci Melgar one is a tough one, but I'm gonna side with Melgar. I think they've reinforced well. They bought a starting defender from the Argentinian league. They brought in Luján, who's been solid in San Martin. They have, you know, young guys like Reina and Ibáñez coming up. They brought back Cuesta and Quevedo, who are proven goal scorers in Peru. I think they took the edge there. As far as Huancayo and UTC, I'm gonna side with Huancayo because I think they're more steady side, kind of know what to expect now. But if UTC makes the upset, I wouldn't mind.
I guess neither of us would. Ruben, who are your favorites in either of these matchups in the Sudamericana?
I would just say Melgar, just because aside from, they reinforced really well. They also have a lot more consolidated youth. The youth that Manucci has are a lot more of up and coming, just these talents that could probably get consolidated through this year, but who haven't really had that chance yet. And as far as Huancayo and Utese, I would just give it to Huancayo. Not because I don't think Utese can do it, just because Huancayo has already like a tradition of football already. They already, they've already been up there in those high positions consistently. They do fairly well continentally. And they did reinforce fairly well. I mean, they also got, also now have competition in, as a guardameta, so that'll be interesting because now you have probably one of the best, if not the best, U23 goalkeepers of last year, Samudio, up against Joel Pinto. So you never really know who's going to be between them. So I don't know. It's just they just have way more of a tradition of football, in continental games than I would think that Utese has for right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Huancayo, I mean, they were kind of unlucky to get eliminated in the Sudamericana this past year, and probably could have easily made a run to the semifinals if it wasn't for that loss to Coquimbo Unido. So, I mean, just one chance and goes their way and it could be a lot different, right? And, I mean, I think defensively, they're just very sturdy and they play a style that I think just suits them in continental competitions. Now, obviously, if they need a goal, then that's, maybe where you saw their deficiencies in that elimination a few months ago. But generally speaking, they do have things under control. I think that puts them at a very good advantage. And then I think Kevin mentioned it there with Melgar, the way they reinforced the players they brought in. I mean, Cuesta coming back was amazing, but then add Quevedo to that. And I just think that they're pretty much complete across the pitch and will be a threat in the competition, you would hope, at least from a Peruvian perspective. So as a follow-up to that, we'll go around the table quickly. Which of the four do you think have the best chance of making the deepest run in the Sudamericana? Ruben, I'll start with you on that.
Melgar, just because I feel like they have a bad taste in their mouth regarding what happened with Bahia. And I think that the players that were present in that game are going to be present in this game and then the games that follow. And they will be very much wanting to prove something, especially because some of them are starting so young. They just have something to prove, I think.
Fair enough. Kevin, who is your favorite or pick to maybe make the deepest run in the Sudamericana this year?
I also have to say Melgar. If Manucci was in the other bracket, I may have, said something for them. But I think since I've already chose Melgar to go through past Manucci, I'm a rock with them. I think they have the most competent setup for a team because the attack, the midfield, they've renewed their senior players like Arias and Joel Sanchez and Caseda, obviously, who was very clutch the last time that they had a good run in the Sudamericana. If Manucci makes it, though, I think that they would also be favored for me over Huancayo or Utese, because I think they've also reinforced their defense a lot. They've brought in proven players like Felucho Rodriguez, El Armenio as their forward. So I think there's potential there if they can sneak by Melgar.
Yeah, for sure. I think that side of the draw, 100%, is probably the stronger side, at least from the Peruvian perspective. Renato, who is your favorite to make the deepest run out of the four teams that are representing us?
If it wasn't for Melgar and Manucci being together, I would say one of them, but I would have to choose one because Utese and Huancayo are starting to look down. I would say Melgar because usually they are the team that of our league that would try to do their best to represent us in the Sudamericana. They have reinforced very on all areas, the defense, the midfield, and the forwards, especially also with that new coach they have, which was once Peckerman's assistant. And he seems to have a good idea and like to bring aspirations to to a continental competition, I do think that Melgar has a great chance, especially with also young players as well.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't hate the other side's chances, Huancayo especially, just because they proved it. Would they say if they still had Navarro around, I feel like we've learned over the years not to underestimate that squad whenever he's been in charge, but with him not being there, you feel like you can maybe withdraw that statement a lot more. But yeah, we shall see what happens. It's certainly very exciting. Four pretty solid teams overall, maybe a couple more than others, but I think that there's a decent chance for a team to make a run. I know we say it every year, but I feel like, eventually a broken clock is right twice a day. We are going to get this right one of these years. Maybe it's this year. We'll move over to Peruvians abroad, guys, to close out the show. A lot of juicy subjects here involving a few players. We'll start with Luis Abraham. There were reports that Abraham would be frozen out at Vélez if he didn't sign a new deal, which his current deal expires in June, so that's kind of why it was top of mind. And Alavés, who are currently battling relegation in La Liga, submitted an offer for Abraham in recent days, and this is kind of what sparked this whole thing. However, it appears that Abraham is safe for now because of the fact that Miguel Brizuela has been omitted from the squad due to an accusation and investigation into a possible sexual assault. Obviously, very serious, but I guess Abraham, in some ways, can maybe breathe a bit easier knowing that his place will be safe for the next little while. If Abraham, however, gets omitted, what does Gareca do, Renato? Because he is probably the go-to choice for Gareca at this point in time. And even though he maybe hasn't looked like his usual vintage self to start the qualifiers, no doubt he'd be a big loss if he was omitted and not playing regularly.
Well, thankfully, we got the center back depth. I could imagine Gareca will want to use someone like Cristian Ramos on the left side, considering that he will be playing Libertadores soon with Eusebe. Maybe I could see Gareca like try make give more an excuse to give Giants more of a chance, or maybe try to see if where Ryan Jean-Pierre Reiner could fit in. But as for Luis Abraham's situation, it's like a situation where I have to see both things on him. On one hand, I could see where it is inevitable that Abraham could get frozen out, because it's not uncommon to hear stories of players being frozen out if they refuse to sign a new deal, and Abraham is could face the consequences of that, and that could not only just hurt him with his continuity, but also Peru itself, because if he's not playing, then that's going to be bad for us. And match fitness of Abraham was a big problem during the first qualifying date. But at the same time, it's his contract. He has every power for to do. If he wants to leave for free, then he leaves for free.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the law says. On that subject, Ruben, the Alaves offer. Obviously, if they stay up, you feel like, provided their interest stays the way it is and the offer is accepted, the move will happen if Alaves stays up. So, what do you think of them as a destination for Abraham?
Well, the whole deal about Luis Abraham and his issue with the contract and all that, I would say that at this point, he's had so many years in Vélez, and he's had so much time, building himself up in just not only value but just in form, that I think he just owes it to himself to look onto the bigger challenge. And like Renato said, we do have squad depth, and you could even look at some one, maybe two options also in Liga Uno, and then some options abroad. So, I mean, at this point, I would say it's okay for us to look at other options as well. Give him that little breathing space, to pursue his career a bit more at this point. Just because we got Santa Maria as well. So there are options. So I would say that.
Yeah, definitely fair enough. We'll move over to Renato Tapia. Because, I mean, how amazing has he been, really? I mean, he's bossing it in Spain with Celta Vigo, who've sort of come down to earth recently after a flying start under Chacho Coudet, but overall, certainly a lot better than where they were last year when they almost got relegated. And obviously, Tapia has been essential to that success this year. Renato, I understand that club and national team systems vary, but what can Gareca learn from how Codet has deployed Tapia and use it to help Peru starting next month?
Well, to see, you got to look at how Tapia works and plays in Codet's system. At Celta, Tapia plays as the full defensive midfielder. When you can let Tapia do all the defensive work in the midfield himself, and he allows the freedom for all the other midfielders in the forwards to do all the attacking work, because you got to keep in mind that Tapia is not the most technically gifted midfielder, but he is a monster in the defense. Now in Peru, he plays a little differently, where because Tapia is usually paired up with another like defensive central-minded midfielder. Usually it could be like Yotun or Aquino. So if somebody's doing Tapia's work a bit, then it kind of limits his uses a bit. But I do think that Gareca should take in mind of maybe putting Tapia as a lone defensive midfielder, giving his great, fantastic form in La Liga.
Now, I just thought of this, and Kevin, I want to ask you this because you've been a proponent of the 4-3-3. You do like Peru using this system. So given how Tapia is deployed at Celta these days, do you feel like that might help Peru when it comes to maybe fitting in all the best midfielders that we have while also getting the best out of one of the in-form players that Peru has currently?
Yeah, definitely. I think we have to take advantage of the fact that one of our strongest depth is in midfield at this point, which is a rare thing to say for Peru. But I can totally see the 4-3-3 with Tapia as the anchor, and then you have Yotun and Aquino to not have to worry so much about that and try to create then danger in our opponent's end. I think it's something that we've been trying to work on. And I could totally see that happening in La Paz, since it could also translate to a more defensive setup, mm-hmm. to try to, you know, keep us in the game, keep it tight in possibly the first half, and then maybe let loose more in the second.
And I think that's a pretty good plan to have, and maybe Gareca is looking at that possibly as a solution. On a similar subject, guys, Yoshimar Yotun, I want to bring him up because his form with Cruz Azul has been, I mean, it hasn't been bad, but it hasn't been good. It's been quite average, I feel, and it's been like that for a while, barring maybe one or two games. And he struggled in most of his appearances for Peru in October and November. And Oblitas and Gareca, which I mentioned off the top of the show, when they were saying that essentially players need to stop being complacent, they need to wake up, and that competition for places needs to be present, Gareca recently reiterated the same thing. I feel like Yotun was one of the players that they were kind of aiming that message at. So, Ruben, if this average play continues, should he be dropped? And if so, who replaces him at this point in time?
Well, with the coming of all these players that are going out of coming out of Peru and playing abroad, because I remember back when we only used to have like three or four players that were relevant in foreign leagues. It was a tough time. That now we're taking the national team a little bit more seriously now that we have so many players abroad. So yeah, definitely, I feel like the competition needs to be reiterated again. And if Yotun isn't up to snuff because of, you know, there could be many factors. I mean, just the fact that he just got older, or who knows. But yeah, somebody could definitely replace him. Leono, you have a player like Tawara who could easily play deep. And you could also put him a little bit higher. He just has those technical qualities. And you also just have just technical midfields that could probably, because of the nature of how Tapia plays, you could put him down as the only defensive midfield, and you can just really, really just dedicate everyone else to offense. I feel like Tapia can maintain that for at least one half. So if you wanted to make it a very offensive team, then you can just add a couple of more offensive players, and we definitely have those alternatives.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe a 4-3-3 switch might help Yotun. I know that we've already used it a couple of times, and it maybe didn't yield the best results for him, but maybe with him playing a lot more, maybe with other players in form, maybe that has an effect with him. But I don't know. It's very possible he could get dropped, at least you know, after the first game. Let's say he starts the first game, doesn't do well, very possible Gedeka maybe sends a message, quote unquote, and drops him and replaces him with somebody else. Kevin, do you feel like I'm being fair, or do you think I'm maybe being a bit too harsh in this situation, and that Yotun is just going to, you know, he will start regardless?
It's, you know, it's fair to say Yotun is in a bit of a rut. He's not been at his best. He hasn't had a game like, you know, Peru, Uruguay, and Lima last qualifiers yet. I still have some hope that he'll step it up. But if, you know, if he doesn't, we enjoyed his prime getting us to the World Cup, and we will look for other options. You know, Cartagena, Tabara, Flores has played the position. You could always drop Cuevita a little bit further back. It's on Yotun. It's on Yotun. It's, you know, similar to the center back position, it's their positions to lose because there's someone ready to step up.
Definitely, definitely. Well, you mentioned him there, Christian Cueva. Let's move on to him. He obviously moved clubs again, which we already know, this time to Al Fateh in the Middle East after that saga at Yeni Malatyaspor. It looked like he was leaving, then it looked like he was staying, and then he was leaving again, and then he finally did. He started well there since moving, as he often does wherever he ends up going over the years. But Renato, considering how much he changed things for Peru against Chile, albeit less impactful versus Argentina, and provided Peru does start with a number 10, maybe even just, you know, on the wing or something in general, do you start him, or could Peña finally get his shot in that position? Or maybe even, and we talked about him earlier, but Benavente maybe get a call up and get an opportunity?
Well, that depends if Gareca wants to play for playmaker. And considering that usually a playmaker is usually involved with his scheme, I imagine Cueva, no matter his form, he would be Gareca's first choice. Though I definitely see Peña getting a shot. Granted, Emin's not really in the best form in the Eras SFV right now since they're battling relegation, but Peña has shown that he can be a candidate for the number 10 position, and Benavente's playing recently at his new club. There are some options in the playmaker's position, or maybe at some point Gareca could give like confidence to maybe someone like Enrique Ramirez, someone to look forward to.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, a lot of options there in the position. Obviously, Bilka we mentioned earlier, maybe he's a surprise call up. We shall see. But yeah, certainly very interesting. We'll close out the show with this, guys, because I feel like on a broader scale, this is also really a big question right now. And we talked about it earlier in the show. Paolo Guerrero is back in training. He's close to recovering from his knee injury. In fact, I think he's almost pretty much fully recovered from the injury itself and done rehab on it. But a quick reminder that he won't be back for the March qualifiers, but he will be getting games probably on the regular in April. And obviously just turning 37 in January, they do have to be very, very careful with how his recovery goes. Now, he is usually very, shall we say, courageous. He doesn't usually have these injuries affect him, even in his older age, which I guess is one of the reasons why he is so durable. But obviously being a couple years older now since his last injury, it might be worth monitoring over the next little bit. But with this in mind, Gianluca Lapadula is probably favored to lead the line in March, seeing as how he's pretty much the only striker playing right now. But Farfan is a free agent. Rui Diaz won't be match fit. Aldair Rodriguez is struggling in Cali. Sucar hasn't played competitively for LASK, and he's just settling in there. He might want to stay, and the coaches might want to keep him there just to kind of get him acclimatized for the preseason and the season following this. So Ormeño could be a possibility, but I mean, I don't know. It just seems like there isn't a lot of movement there. Maybe that changes in the next couple of weeks, and we'll see movement in that regard. But I'll go around the table on this, and I'll start with you, Kevin. Do you feel like there's any possibility of maybe any sort of surprise call-up for these March qualifiers, given the dearth of, I guess, match-fit options up front?
So I definitely expect Lapadula to start in the next qualifiers, but I think it's time for Ormeño to get called up. I think there's more than enough reason with Guerrero and Farfan to me I personally think they shouldn't be called for these matches. So that does leave that spot open. And the guys in form, Gareca almost dedicated a little section to him in his last conference, where he kind of put the ball in his court. You know, do a campaign like La Padula. Get a tattoo of a Tumi or something. It's in his court. He wants him to bring Gareca some flowers. Just get it done, Armenio. This is the time.
Exactly. You're never going to get a better opportunity, 100%. Ruben, what do you make of the striker situation right now? Do you feel like maybe Ormeño is in contention here to maybe get called up for March, or do you see maybe the call-ups in that regard going another way?
I mean, like you said, like everyone's saying, it's a very limited pool right now, considering the people who are playing right now actively. The only person I can really see making any kind of an effect besides Ormeño, because I do believe that Ormeño should work to get called up, would be if Valera has some kind of great run in Libertadores or something like that, because we know that he's already in the he's already being observed by Gareca at the very least, so he will be expected to perform at some kind of level, at least in a continental matchup. So that would probably be the only surprise I can think of. Aside from that, if Aldair can get more minutes and somehow score a goal maybe. But those are probably the three that probably have the biggest chance to making some kind of splash bigger than La Padula. But La Padula, for sure, I think he's going to be the starter.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I'd like to see Valera getting called up, even if it's just as impact substitute role. I mean, at least give him a shot, right? I mean, he's made pretty good progress here in the last 12 months, so why not reward the kid? Renato, what are your thoughts on the striker situation? How do you see it playing out a month in advance here?
Yeah, it's a tough situation right now. Unfortunately, we're not going to have Paolo around because he's recovering, and at his age, you want to be very, very cautious. I do expect La Padula to play a major role. As for Ormeño, as Ruben said, he's gonna have to work hard to justify a call-up, but I would also not be against a call-up for him. It would certainly add depth to our strikers candidates. Unfortunately, Aldair is having a rough time in Colombia right now. Sucar is still adapting Austria, and it's honestly best that he stays there as much as he can so he can get ready for the next season in Austria by the summer. But I would do like to see Valera get a chance, though that would be determined if he does well for the next one season in Libertadores.
Yeah, certainly a couple possibilities, not many, but I mean, interesting options for Gareca available here. And maybe we do end up seeing an Ormeño call-up just based out of necessity, if anything else. But yeah, obviously we'll find out what happens in the next couple of weeks here once the squad gets unveiled. So that'll do it for us this week. Thank you everybody for listening once again. You can follow me, Peter Galindo, on Twitter at GalindoPW, and you can follow the show at Peru Waltz. Renato, what is your Twitter handle, and do you have a final shout out for the week?
My Twitter handle is Renato_Sun. Just want to give a shout out to all the players that are currently training in Liga 1. Hopefully the league can come back as soon as possible, because I know all the athletes are begging to play, especially so they can be in consideration for the March qualifiers, and I just hope things get back soon.
Absolutely, absolutely. Kevin, what is your Twitter handle, and do you have a final shout out for the week?
Hey, you guys can find me at KMontalvon7 on Twitter. My shout out is to the 16U20 that'll be following around Gareca's Peru. This is your moment, guys. Gareca's willing to make a point, and there's a Copa America right around the corner.
Yeah, now or never, really, for them. Ruben, your Twitter handle, and do you have any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
Sure, yeah. Just follow me at Promesas y Juveniles at Pro Y Juve on Twitter. And since Kevin already stole my shout-out, just for los dirigentes that are going to be meeting before tomorrow with the gobierno, just hopefully they can get this all straightened away so that we can all – just enjoy football the way that we have since last year.
Indeed. Maybe not completely, but certainly in some ways, as football as we know it, for sure. Yeah, can't wait for it to start again as well. I'm with you guys on all of that. So that'll do it for us. Thank you for listening. This is the Peruvian Waltz team, and we are signing off.
Rubiños en el arco, la defensa es colosal. González orlando la torre, Nicolás Fuentes y Chumpitas. Chale Mifflin y Cubillas y el gran Perico León. Bailón y Alberto Gallardo, completo.